Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon on day four of Wimbledon. It is 10:45 p.m. and play has just been stopped for the night on centre court due to the hashtag curfew, the famous Wimbledon curfew. And the status of play, I'm sure you all know this at the time of stoppage, is Andy Murray leading Stefanos Tsitsipas by 2-1. If he's not already in an ice bath, I suspect he's going to be in one within a minute and a half, because about a minute and a half before they stopped the match due to the curfew, whilst Andy Murray was trying to serve out that third set, he slipped and seemed to cause himself a bit of mischief. We don't know how much mischief on his hip. I've said Andy Murray and hip in the same sentence and it's making me wince. He got up, carried on, served out the set. All sorts of drama, and that's only in the three sets that we've seen so far. We're going to be back, and we're going to do it all again tomorrow. It's going to be fun.
If it's anything like tonight, it is definitely going to be fun. Yeah, I think I'm already worried about lying in bed tonight, wondering how Andy Murray's hip, stroke, groin, stroke, thigh, whatever it is that he hurt there is going to hold up tomorrow, because you know sometimes these things are okay in the moment and they can really hurt the next day. Because gosh, I hope he's all right, because the tennis that he is playing, and honestly the tennis that Stefanos Tsitsipas played as well, is probably the best I've seen this tournament, I would say. And I didn't know that Andy Murray had that level in him. I didn't know that Stefanos Tsitsipas had that level in him in this moment that he's in his career. Obviously, we've seen him play like this before, but not for a while, certainly not since the Australian Open. He was brilliant tonight, I thought, Tsitsipas, hitting his forehand so hard, going after Murray's second serve, composed, focused, none of the drama with his box like there so often is in his matches at the moment. I thought he was fantastic. And for Andy Murray to withstand that level and get himself into a couple of tie breaks, which felt like the only chance he would have to try and break the Tsitsipas, you know, serve, get a few points on return there, which he did in that second set tie break, just goes to show the level that Murray was playing at as well, because that was high quality, fun, dramatic stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately for Stefanos Tsitsipas's mental health, emptiness seems to really suit his tennis, doesn't it? He was sensational tonight. That looked like a match so far between two top five players to me. It was so high quality.
Yeah, it was high quality. I think surprisingly so to some degree from both sides of the net. I mean, Tsitsipas just don't really think of him as a grass court player, but he started that first set. He was moving really well. He was also very clever, I thought. I was listening to some of the commentary on BBC Radio, and Pat Cash was pointing out how he was going with his forehand to the Murray forehand a lot. You know, we're in a position you would normally hit inside out. He was going the other way. He was hitting inside in, and he was hitting so many winners or just pushing Murray into that corner. I think probably thinking, a bloke with a metal hip can't keep going that direction for the next 3 hours. And it was paying off for him. What I didn't expect was Murray to improve the way he did in the second set, to suddenly start to find movement that we really haven't seen from him at Wimbledon, you know, in 8 years. And then the serve took off. I mean, the serve in that third set, I had a look at the statistics. He was getting 60% of the first serves in the first two sets. In the third set, he was getting 86% of them in. It was just rolling over with the new technique that Matt identified yesterday.
And now that Matt has identified it and got Andy Murray to admit to this new technique...
Well, you did that.
It's so obvious. It looks really different.
Mm. Yeah,
not that it wasn't a great spot. It was, but obviously, you know, once you know, you know. That's what Tsitsipas should be doing on a tennis court, looking like a bully.
Yeah.
His ground strokes are so big, and I know the backhand is a weakness, but if he's hitting his forehand and serving that big, he can protect the weakness of the backhand. And I thought it was staggering to me that Andy Murray was able to hang with Tsitsipas playing that well from the baseline. I was thinking Andy Murray needs to make this more of an Andy Murray match, make it more...
The grounds will be closing in around 15 minutes.
Okay.
Please make your way to the exit gates and make sure you take all your belongings with you. We hope you've enjoyed your day here at Wimbledon and wish you a pleasant and safe journey home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't worry, that doesn't apply to us. We don't get locked in. We're not going anywhere. What was I saying? The Tsitsipas forehand and serve. Yeah, I thought Andy Murray needed to make it more cat and mouse.
Mm.
Needed to make it messier and to try and get up in Tsitsipas's kitchen and start scrambling some eggs. And he started to do a little bit more of that towards the end of the second set. But still, when Tsitsipas is serving like that and hitting the forehand like that, there's not many eggs available for scrambling.
You're very determined to keep this analogy going.
It works.
Yes, it works.
And then just managed one game of scrambled eggs at the start of the third set to break the Tsitsipas serve after the bathroom breaks and the booing. Booing on centre court, folks. Be still my heart. It was wonderful. Just one lapse of concentration for Tsitsipas when his eggs were momentarily scrambled, and that was enough for Andy Murray to serving as he was, as you said, David, serve his way through that third set.
Yeah, he won 11 points in a row in a little stretch there, Murray. End of the second set tiebreak to building a two-love lead in the third set, and that's the difference between them at the moment. And yeah, I think Murray was probably a bit annoyed by the length of the bathroom break, in that he came out first and very intentionally sort of went out to his baseline position. He was ready. Tsitsipas did get booed, may have just affected him a little bit because there was a little drop off in level there for a moment. Murray pounced, took advantage. And he managed to maintain that break for the rest of the set. So, yeah, key little moments in five set matches are what makes it so fascinating. It is a marathon, but little moments can be so decisive.
And now they get to come back tomorrow. We're waiting for the new order of play to drop. The customary thing is that the match to be completed goes on second.
Yeah,
it will be inserted into the existing order of play second on. We'll confirm that, I assume, over the course of this show. And we have had confirmation, haven't we, from the referee's office that provided the weather is fair tomorrow, the resumption of the match will be played with the roof open.
Yeah.
Not like what happened in 2019
18,
when Djokovic against Nadal in their semi-final played first half under the roof. Came back the next day and it resumed under the roof in order to keep consistent conditions. And it didn't feel right at the time, did it? I think that was a kind of figuring out as you go kind of situation. So I was pleased to hear that, you know, the Reef will be open tomorrow. They're insistent that this is an outdoor tournament and matches are played outdoors wherever they can be.
Unless... Look, it didn't feel right to me that that match started under the roof tonight. It was 7:30, I think, around about there that they started. There was an hour and a half still of play that they could have got done outside, and that could have been enough to finish the match. I mean, it's unlikely, very unlikely, but it's possible. Yeah, I think that's a tough scene for them to be starting that in those conditions. I know they want it, you know, so that they don't have to interrupt the match halfway through. But it doesn't feel right to me. This, as you said, this is an outdoor tournament. You close the roof if it's raining or if it's dark. And it was neither of those things.
Andy Murray would have been pleased that totally. That match wasn't interrupted by a reef close. I mean, in the end, it's been over interrupted by night time. But we know he gets stiff when you have to sit on the sidelines waiting for the roof to be closed. What's going to happen tomorrow? Will Andy Murray make an omelette out of Stefanos Tsitsipas?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say I think Andy Murray... You don't know how he's going to come out. I mean, look, that was a nasty fall he had at the end of tonight. We don't know if he's... Well, it wasn't a fall. It was a sort of change of direction, wasn't it? It was a nasty moment, a scary one. He falls on the ground. I think... My first instinct is it was shock, it was fear, understandable feelings, and you just hope that he hasn't done anything that is going to impact him tomorrow. My sense is that he has now found what he's looking for in his form. Who knows, he may be a little bit tentative tomorrow when he comes out, the way he was tonight. He'll be fine tonight, and Tsitsipas was just better for us in the important moments for a set. You want that Murray from his perspective that took over in set two, because Tsitsipas actually couldn't really stay with him in the second two sets. And I think that Murray will get this done now from here. That it's so the efficiency that we talked about a couple of nights ago, it's so important. If he'd have not won that second set, I don't think he's coming back. Or if he is coming back, it's cost him his tournament, because he's not going to get through five sets against Tsitsipas and rebound and then start winning again. He needs to be getting these things done in the minimum number of sets. And I was very impressed. I thought after he dropped that first set, I thought he's in trouble here, because I thought Tsitsipas would actually get better. And he didn't. He sort of stayed more or less the same level. It was Murray who elevated. And I think that's a massive testament to his fitness and his freshness.
Murray for me, yeah. Assuming the groin is okay. What a sentence.
Laszlo Djere awaits the winner of that match in round three, right? Because Ben Shelton got taken down by Djere. So Djere enjoying playing serve and volleys.
I saw the end of the third set of that. I was just going up to the hill to join my old friend Des from my childhood, who was here with tickets today to watch the first set of the Murray match.
Des, without whom none of us would be here today.
Yeah, he rescued me from the lost law years by telling me to butt my ideas up and go back
go
and
on,
retake all my exams. Anyway, I was on my way to join him to watch on Henman Hill the first set of Andy Murray. Very enjoyable. I'm not really built for Henman Hill, got to say, sitting in those sort of small spaces with your knees next to other people.
Imagine other people next to you, yeah, felt.
They didn't behind you.
There was a sort of ring of space behind me where people couldn't see.
Do you hear people groan when you arrive?
There was a bit of that.
In that sort of scenario. Theatre, cinema,
yeah.
Hill.
Oh, God, do you have to sit there?
Plane.
But anyway, on the way past, I spotted that Jarrett and Shelton were at one set all, 3 points all in the tiebreak. So obviously I've got to stay for the rest of that tiebreak.
Correct, following and there was all the rules.
And Shelton had some moments. He was celebrating wildly. He thought he'd got him, you know. He thought he'd got him in that third set. And Jarrett just managed to turn it around. And that was the match right there. And yeah, Jarrett's now had two close matches against Cressy and Shelton, come through some really tough tiebreaks. So he's tight, match tight. I just think that game style is so different to what Murray would provide for him that Yeah, that's a different test.
So Andy Murray and his hip now have to sleep on being one set and one omelette away from Laszlo Djere for a place in a Grand Slam second week, the first one since Wimbledon 2017. Incidentally, I would like to interrupt this broadcast to bring you beer news, because a theme that has developed in the live chat while we're doing the live YouTube shows is people enjoying the race to see who finishes the beer first. Well, there was a dastardly move in the beer race today. Matt took out my beer altogether.
Like seconds before we went on air.
Yeah. If you could smell us right now, there would be a heavy stench of beer in the air. That's why I suppose it was a helping hand in the beer race, because I started so far down. David had to donate me some of his beer.
Yes,
but
did.
Anyway,
I got a bit offended by the "chivalry is dead" comment the other day, so I thought, okay, I'll make up for it now.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm not sure this is a level playing field in the beer race today.
No, I think it's null and void tonight.
All bets are off. How is the 90s off going between David and Matthew in the newsletter?
It is 4-3 to Matthew. No one has answered a question today.
Okay.
Yet.
Well, I'm looking forward to
that. I love the 90s off.
Yeah, we love the 90s
King
off.
King of the 90s.
I would say it's advantage David tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, we've done a question which we think David will get and Matthew won't.
Real test. If Matthew gets it right...
We thought the same about the Roger Federer 99 question. So we could be wrong. We've underestimated you in the past, David.
Yes, you have.
Sorry, I meant overestimated, actually.
Oh, thanks.
Anyway, back to the tennis, folks. And while we're on the subject of the YouTube, do like and subscribe.
Yeah.
David's kids are giving me instructions about
how
to be young on YouTube. Should we stick with the men, seeing as we're here already? Biggest win of Liam Brody's career today. 5 sets, 6-love in the fifth over 4th seed Casper Ruud. He'll now face Denis Shapovalov in round 3. That match will happen tomorrow because rain and tennis. I'm so pleased for him. I know we're not supposed to... We're supposed to be completely impartial here and you know, we largely are, but how can you not be pleased for Liam Brody? I know we had him on our podcast during the pandemic, and what was the line of his from that interview that you produced earlier, David?
Well, he was talking at the time about how concerned he was about his finances, because he at the time he was ranked a lot lower than he is now. He'd been scrapping away on the challenger circuit, just trying to find a way to make a living, and then the pandemic comes along and it's really threatening his career, genuinely having to consider whether he can keep going by the end of the year if this doesn't improve, the situation of tournaments not being there. And he said, but this has never been about money for me, this sport. He said, I would play this sport for free. That's how much he loves it. And so I do feel emotional towards him when he has success and gets prize money and is able to make a sustainable living out of this sport. I mean, he said in his press conference today, even now I don't clear that much by the time I've paid for a strength and conditioning trainer and my coach and all the things that I need to pay for, but he's making it a going concern, this career of his. He gets, I think, £130,000 for getting into the third round. And who knows? Maybe he's not done yet.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he got to the third round last year, I think, didn't he, as well? And obviously got the prize money, but didn't get the points. So it's a really big deal for him to be getting those points this year. That could be a real game changer. And something I found fascinating in his press conference was him talking about, you know, he was on centre court today, he opened up centre court, that's a really big moment for him, and he said that ever since he lost the junior final here at Wimbledon, which was on court 1, I think he lost to Luke Saville, I think. And he said, I choked it, I absolutely choked that match away, and I think guffed it was a word that he used as well. And he said ever since then he's had a real problem playing big matches and big courts. He said it's haunted him his whole career. He said, I think he lost his first seven Challenger finals. And he said in all those big matches, he was thinking about that other big match that he'd lost. And he'd lost matches on Centre and won before. And finally today, he was able to get that big win. And what an amazing moment and what an amazing admission that something in your junior career can end up sort of following you throughout your pro career as well. I thought it was fascinating. I was delighted for Liam Brody. He's one of the good guys.
Yeah, and that's the sort of admission that highlights exactly why we all like him, isn't it? Because he's so human and so relatable. He feels like one of us out there trying to do superhuman things and compete with superhumans. You also went to Casper Ruud's press conference, Matt.
Yep.
I was a bit wound up by this performance from Casper Ruud.
Lucky you didn't go to the press conference.
Because...
Why were you wound up?
Look, he might never be a Wimbledon champion, but come on, Casper, you're the fourth seed.
Is he a bit too okay with losing?
Yeah, he's too okay with losing at a Grand Slam.
Right.
It's Wimbledon, it's a Grand Slam. He wasn't tanking in that match, but his level of competitiveness in that fifth set and focus and dialed in-ness was not becoming of a world number four, I don't think. He looked like a man that was thinking about his next The Weeknd concert.
Well, I have news on that front, which I will get to.
I can't wait.
There was a 12-minute game in that final set, which felt like the match, really. Ruud was already down a break. He was serving. Brody was throwing everything at him to try and get the double break. He did get the double break. And then after that, Ruud's resistance really did fall off. Ruud came into press, and the part of his press conference I didn't like, I would echo what you said. He said, "No, it's my best Wimbledon." And he said he was pretty happy with how he played. And he said he thinks that Liam Brody is a better grass court player than he is.
Even Liam Brody was a little bit dismissive of that idea.
Yeah.
And he said, I think he should be a bit more ambitious than that.
Right. So I sort of...
Yes.
I sort of quizzed Casper Ruud on a couple of things. I said, does he intend to play this schedule every year on grass? Or is this a...
This schedule of weekend concerts... As a build-up to Wimbledon.
Yeah, and golf.
What will he do when the weekend isn't on tour?
Exactly, yeah. Well, he basically said that he intends probably to keep this schedule the same, to take a break after Roland Garros before Wimbledon. He mentioned that he wants to play the clay court tournaments after Wimbledon. They're important to him because he loves playing on clay so much. And all the time, he was absolutely talking down his own game on grass. He was just saying that he can't really do it. So I said, well, people used to say you were only a clay court player and you've managed to conquer hard court. So why can't you do it on grass as well? Is it, is the season just too short that you don't think it's worth it? And he did make an interesting point that he feels the way he plays, he's actually, I think it's in his head, I think he's worried about getting injured on the grass. He feels like he would have to change the way he sort of moves out to his forehand because it was all a bit technical, but he sort of plants that leg and he's worried about sort of the movement on grass, basically. And he doesn't want to have to change it just for a specific little swing.
Well, yeah, you are more likely to get injured on grass if you only play one or two matches on it per year. This is all self-fulfilling.
Mm. But it was, it was interesting.
It really winds me up.
I told you it was a good job you didn't go to that press conference. It would have ruined your day, as I'm now doing by relaying it to you. Anyway, I had to get one last question in, and I said to him, are you going to the weekend concert in London, because you're now out of Wimbledon? And he reminded me that he is still in the doubles, and now I'm convinced that's the only reason he entered the doubles, so that he would still be around.
Has he ever played doubles before?
So he is going to the weekend concert tomorrow, and Casper Ruud is living his best life, I think, to be fair.
Who's his doubles partner? Because they should probably book a ticket home on Saturday.
Somebody I've never heard of, I have to say.
Right. Okay.
Someone who's going out in round one.
I have no idea who it was, but it did have a bit of a sort of Mark Lopez Nadal feel.
Stan Wawrinka won today and booked a third round meeting with Novak Djokovic, which is what we wanted to see. This is the only slam where they haven't played, I believe, and it will be their first meeting in a slam for a number of years. And on paper, okay, I'm not suggesting Wawrinka is the guy he was in 2015, 2016, but still, matchups are matchups. That was exciting to me when I saw it in the order of play. I know you want to get pumped about this, David.
I do, yeah.
So I am just going to stop you right in your tracks and throw some cold water on your anticipated pumpness with a quote from Stan Wawrinka's press conference today.
Don't ruin it, Stan.
This is a word-for-word quote.
Okay.
There's zero opportunity to win Wimbledon for me, I think. I'm happy to have won today again. I think it was a great match. I'm playing better each match. And as I say, I think it's an honour to play Novak here. I was missing that in my career, to play him in a Grand Slam in Wimbledon. That's the last one I never played him, and it's going to be a difficult challenge. Hopefully, I can make a competitive match. But if you look at recent results, I don't really stand a chance.
Are you gonna go in on that in the same way you're going in on Casper Ruud?
Mate, you're a three-time Grand Slam champion.
Can I just suggest to you that those spectacular mind games? Absolutely.
He's not a mind game guy.
Stan Wawrinka is not Casper Ruud. Stan Wawrinka thinks he's going to win in his
heart.
Does he? Hasn't he beaten him in all of the other three?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's won four of their last five matches at Slams, I think.
Well...
You think that's a mind game?
Yeah. Absolutely. He's got nothing to lose, has he? You can say that. Put all the pressure on Novak and then just come out swinging.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think he's got any chance. I don't think he's got much chance anyway. But, I mean, I would love him to play well. I tell you what, I am really quite impressed that he set this up. To come through two rounds... on the surface he dislikes the most, at the age he is, with the knees he's got, I mean, I think it's an incredible achievement.
Now, there is somebody that, I mean, he's equally as unsuited for grass as Casper Ruud, equally unsuited as Casper Ruud, and always has been. And he hasn't improved that much on it over the years. He's incrementally got better, but he really has tried. Remember that year when he got Richard Krajicek on board to consult just on the grass? I think he did it with somebody else as well, got another sort of super coach in just for grass. He's really tried. He's had the right attitude. That's the stuff, Casper.
He might get there.
I mean,
Sam was a late bloomer.
We should also add that Casper Ruud has reached three Grand Slam finals.
I think that's where
months.
I cut him some slack.
But that's the thing.
But maybe he wouldn't
You're
do
a
that.
Big, you, maybe, this is a grand slam.
Maybe he wouldn't do that if he started to throw all of his energy into Wimbledon as well. Is that then okay?
Well, he doesn't know unless he tries.
But I suppose...
He threw all his energy into a South American tour with Rafael Nadal being his ball boy or something, didn't he?
And he admitted that was a mistake in hindsight.
And he still reached the French Open final.
The thing is, we talk all the time, Catherine, a lot of those tennis players are pretty miserable. Yep. They are not having a good time on the tour, and that's a whole bigger, wider issue. Casper Ruud, if he wants to just have a few weeks of fun after reaching the French Open final, backing up the French Open final... I don't have too much problem with that. I would be more annoyed if he continued to just ditch grass forever in his career. I'm absolutely with you. I think he should try eventually. But right now, in this moment, I don't feel that bad about it.
I think I'd have felt better about it if he'd just not come. I almost think it's a bit disrespectful for the fourth seed to come and have that attitude towards Wimbledon. And a Grand Slam.
I agree with you. I am disappointed that he hasn't got more ambition towards it and that he didn't think, do you know what? I want to have a right good go at this. I am disappointed. I agree with you. I mean, I think it's quite funny, but but I don't want to see this year after year.
No.
It's funny once.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know? Weeknd's not on tour next year, yeah, as far as we know, so watch this space. In better news, Francis Tiafoe and Grigor Dimitrov set up a...
We just spent such a long time talking about someone who didn't really want to be here and is out of the tournament.
I'm trying to move things along.
Sorry. It's his fault.
Francis Tiafoe is playing Grigor Dimitrov in round three. That's great.
Is it? Oh, sorry, yeah. Not is it great? Is that happening? I did not know that. That's really excellent.
It's really excellent. Yes, I agree.
I'm delighted.
Other round three
When's
matches?
That?
Probably tomorrow.
Who can say, David?
There's so much.
When is anything?
I have no idea when.
Actually,
anything is.
I think that one will be Saturday because Tiafoe and Dimitrov, they've both played 2 days in a row. So I think that one is Saturday. Taylor Fritz went out today.
Who to?
Mikael Immer on
he was
on
two
the
sets
court
to
behind
love
us.
Up.
Yeah.
Fritz was two sets to
Fritz
love up and he lost.
Two sets to love up and lost.
I don't know how I missed that result, but that is shocking. Was he injured?
Don't think so. He didn't come to press. Was waiting for a press time to come through. Thought maybe I'd missed it coming through. Checked to see for transcripts. There wasn't one. Maybe he wasn't requested. I don't know.
I mean, Mikael Immer is talented. I've seen him play, but still, that is a really shocking result. I'm really taken aback by that.
And yet, I agree with you. On paper, it's shocking, but it follows the pattern of Taylor Fritz's last sort of year now of Grand Slam results. He did very well here last year. Reached the quarterfinals
the other week,
but since then, it's been early exits.
Not saying I called this, but when I interviewed him on the eve of Queens, he didn't look right. He didn't look happy. Didn't look comfortable. There was a distant look in his eye.
It's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but it's not conducive to good tennis. I hope he's okay.
Yeah. Turns out it wasn't his time.
It was briefly his time, and then it was time to leave. So Taylor Fritz is out, Ben Shelton's out, so tough scene for the American men today. Unless anybody has any other submissions, I would like to move on to talk about the women.
Just to say, I think Daniil Medvedev is in a good place overnight, and I thought he might be out of this tournament today, facing Adrian Mannarino, who he'd lost to 3 times out of 4 on grass in the past. Didn't see a lot of this match because we were obviously focused on Mario Tsitsipas, but that to me suggests a step up from Medvedev to be leading Mannarino 2 sets to love. He was up a break. I did see the game where he totally threw away his serve in that third set, and then did some sort of slight trolling where he basically wanted the match to finish for darkness and seemed to call the physio in order to sort of facilitate that some more time would be taken and they would have to go off the darkness. But generally, that's a pretty impressive scoreline for Medvedev, I think.
You say we didn't watch this match, but we actually did watch everything that you need to see of this match. It hasn't finished, folks.
Of course, I've forgotten the actual highlight.
But we did actually see the only highlight that there will ever be from this match, which was Adrian Mannarino hitting an underarm serve that bounced before the net.
Dear, that's humiliating, isn't it?
Matt and I had the stream up on Matt's laptop in the centre court press seats while watching Andy Murray, and we just kept on looping it back and watching it over and over again.
I also think we sort of
chef's kiss
slightly watched it through the eyes of our cameraman Matthew as well.
Yes, cameraman Matthew, who's adamant that he doesn't want to be seen or heard, but he turns out to be a guy that has a penchant for a flat backhand, and if you got a penchant for a flat backhand, Medvedev Mannarino is the place to be, and that's exactly where he was.
Would you accept a flat backhand list as a sort of side deal from Matthew?
Sure. I encourage all lists.
We'll let you know on the flat
backhand.
I'm the
only one who hasn't got a list.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Moving on to talk about the women's matches today, there was a period of about 3 hours this afternoon, maybe more, where it was banger after banger after banger in the women's draw. There was some extraordinary tennis, extraordinary drama and extraordinary quality. You had two deciding set tiebreaks in the space of about an hour and a half. And David, you had the most unbelievable match on court number one, which you got to commentate all of from the best seat in the house in the company of Tracy Austin.
Yeah.
Good day for David.
I felt very lucky today. I felt really privileged today to be watching. And I got to commentate on two amazing matches today. We'll come on to the other one, I'm sure, in a minute, but let's concentrate on that one.
Not if
one.
We keep talking about Casper Ruud, we won't.
So, yeah, I'm there on court number one with Tracy Austin watching Donna Vekic against Sloane Stephens. So you've got Pam Shriver in the coaching box. I'm sitting next to Tracy. The two of them used to have all sorts of battles in the day, quite a rivalry, and I don't think they always got on famously, although in recent years I think that's changed. But it was so interesting to hear Tracy's takes on what we were watching because of how the match went. And, you know, she's watched these two players for years, particularly Sloane Stephens, even more closely than I think we have. We're real sort of super fans of Sloane Stephens because of what she's capable of doing, the US Open run, maybe even more the French Open final that she led Simona Halep in and didn't end up winning. But for the first set and a half, or nearly two sets of that match, it was so exhilarating to watch Sloane Stephens play like that. She did go 3-1 down. She sort of came out cold, but the intensity, you would have had her on the list temporarily.
I did.
I'm telling you.
I did. And she's a weird one for consideration for the intensity list because, generally speaking, the intensity list doesn't include people that can turn it on and off like a tap. The intensity list is about people that would be intense if they were playing in their back garden. And Sloane Stephens is absolutely not that. She can look very unintense on a given day. But when she turns it on, when she dials in, it's irresistible.
And the difference was, with that intensity came aggression. And I think Donna Vekic must have been in shock at what was coming her way, because I think Vekic assumed with her big serve and her own attacking game that she would be the aggressor, and that it would be a bit like, okay, not as extreme, but a bit like Sabalenka against Sloane Stephens, and Stephens would be the counter-attacker. And what was actually happening was Stephens was just teeing off and just taking her out. She was trying to hurt with every shot. And it was exhilarating to watch. She turned that set around from 1-3 down. She won it 6-4. She went 3 love up in the second. Donna was in tears. She was just so upset about, I think, her own performance. And frankly, I mean, it's understandable. She had 29% first serves in the first set. A player with that serve, you know, and that would have had Pam pulling her hair out, because the serve is where she does her damage. Then she goes 5-2 ahead in the second set, Stephens, and it's damage limitation really for Vekic at this point. It's make a serve for it at least, which she did. She held, and then it started to change, and it changed with a wobble for Stephens. You've got to say she tightened. She started to be safe. She started to that aggression started to desert her. She was waiting for errors, and Vekic wrestled that match away from her, and it was a brilliant turnaround from her. And it, you know what, a lot of us have got Vekic going deep in this tournament, but that match could still send her deep in this tournament, because there's opportunity out there for somebody
that has to face Markéta Vondrousova in the next round.
Good player, but yeah. Still, you know, I know which one's more comfortable on this surface.
I don't think Vekic likes playing lefties, so that's a bit tricky. But I thought Vekic was astonishing to turn that match around. The way she started
belting the forehand. Unreal.
Yeah.
The quality was... I mean, we are court level in that commentary box, right in the corner of the court, and the trajectory of the ball over the net. When you do TV commentary, you're supposed to be watching the screen so that you're not talking about something the viewer can't see. I just couldn't help but look out the window. Because of the way the ball was flashing over the net, it was so good to watch.
Yeah, and she said on the court, wasn't it, that she had a panic attack in that second set, and then she sort of expanded on that in the press conference afterwards, saying that Wimbledon to her is the most important tournament of the year. Shout out Casper Ruud, and she
poor
felt
bloke can't get. Break.
And she felt like she was playing really well coming into it, and then suddenly she can't serve, she's having a bad day on serve, she's playing a sort of inspired Sloane Stephens. It's all going wrong very quickly in her mind, and she's having to manage those expectations that she's got of herself. So for her to turn that around in the middle of the match, I thought was an absolutely astonishing feat. And the scenes at the end, I mean, the emotion from Donna, the emotion from Pam.
Well, they were
course.
Celebrating like a title win. Now, and I don't have a problem with that, because I think that, A, that is one of the best wins of her career to turn that around. And secondly, the land of opportunity that could open up.
Well, we all had her in our semi-finals because of the draw, didn't we? Although Sloane Stephens followed by Markéta Vondrousova actually sounds like quite a difficult draw. But I agree, David. Vondrousova, no pedigree on grass at all, but I see her name in a draw and I think,
on her day,
what's happening there? Yeah.
On her day, you never know. Yeah. She's so talented.
She beat Kudermetova today, which is a very, very good win.
She's a Grand Slam underperformer, isn't she? She's kind of a Taylor Fritz of the WTA, because she's so consistent elsewhere but hasn't really done anything at Slams. Let's talk about the other match that you commentated on today alongside Joe Drury. I listened to a lot of that commentary.
That
loved
was fun
it.
Time as well.
Did not love seeing Karolina Muchova fall and have to take an injury timeout off court. She might very well have lost this match anyway to Yulia Niemeyer, future Wimbledon champion, quarter finalist here last year, of course. It was a cracking contest, a set all, nip and tuck. Niemeyer goes a break up at the start of the third, so she's on top.
She's 2-love,
fair and square,
30-15 up.
But then the curse strikes.
Yeah, then it was a horrible slip, one of those changes of direction for Muchova, and her legs went opposite ways, a bit like we saw with Elise Cornet in her match, and this was immediately a problem. And she went off the court, she had the medical timeout, and it just seemed to get worse. She wasn't able... fair play to her for finishing the match. I hope she doesn't do any further damage, but it was... I obviously desperately upsetting to see Karolina Muchová, of all people, getting injured yet again. Hope it's not serious. But I don't want to take away from what was a compelling grass court match, a real display of players who know how to play grass court tennis. I now understand why Hannah calls Yulia Niemeyer a future Wimbledon champion. She got to the quarterfinals last year, but it's not just the result. It's what she's setting out to do. Her instincts are to play grass court tennis. She sees a ball there, and it's on the backhand, and she will chip it and come to the net. So will Muchová. The difference was one of those players was played in, match tight. I'm afraid Karolina Muchová had a bit of the Casper Ruuds, not in terms of necessarily attitude. I can't judge why. I don't know why she didn't play a warm-up event. But she was rusty. She was setting up point-winning opportunities and missing the decisive shot time after time after time. And I just think if she'd have got through this match and not had this slip, and I know there's a lot of ifs there, she'd not have been missing those shots. But Niemeyer's got a beefy forehand. She has a really... It's not just brute power, though. She loves to drag an opponent off the court with a cross-court forehand. It's got loads of work on it. And she's got a great slice serve out wide as well. Really good player. On this surface particularly.
Yeah, I loved this match. I headed out to court 12 to be there. And it struck me that Muchová is kind of a touch player with a surprising amount of power. And Niemeyer is a power player with a surprising amount of touch, and it was a lovely matchup, as David said, perfect on the grass. And Muchová was definitely rusty. You know, it wasn't the Muchová, the sharp Muchová that we saw beat Sabalenka at Roland Garros and push Iga Swiatek in that final. And yet, it almost felt to me like she'd become a big match player after Roland Garros, because Niemeyer was having all these breakpoint chances in the first set, and every single time pretty much Muchová would come up with a big serve when she needed it. And she held from love 40, she almost held from love 40 again right at the end, and it was the 13th breakpoint of the set that eventually Niemeyer took to win that first set. But then despite that, Muchová bounces back, wins the second set, and it was just so perfectly set up for the decider. I was so excited for it. And I'd literally had the thought, oh, Mukova's not got any strapping on. This is another tournament in a row where we're seeing Muchová without any strapping. And then I was cursing myself, because moments later, Muchová curse strikes. And as David describes, she slips, her legs go in opposite directions. And she initially said she was okay. Niemeyer went over and said, are you okay? And she said, yeah, I'm okay. But then she took a few paces and realised, actually, I'm not. And she started stretching it out and had an assessment on court, then had to go off and came back. And suddenly she was back in the strapping, and the match was kind of over at that point. It was a real, real shame, because it had been such a joy for two sets.
I mentioned matches that went to deciding set tiebreaks. They involved Belinda Bencic, who went through 7-6 in the third over Danielle Collins. Where's this come from Belinda Bencic? Yeah. Don't understand her at all.
Makes me wish I'd been available to watch that as well. You know, there's a lot of catch-up that needs to be done.
She plays Magda Linette next. And the other match, extraordinary match that went to a deciding set tiebreak, Caroline Garcia beating Leila Fernandez, I think 10-6 in the deciding set tiebreak. The hitting in this, it was so good. Leila Fernandez, look, she's great in her own right, but she makes such a good opponent. She makes good matches. And this was fantastic. And of course, and look, it's only third round that she's won through to, but of course, Caroline Garcia is doing well in the Wimbledon when nobody picked her to do well. Last year she came in with all the fanfare, had won Berlin, we were all talking about her, she'd won the WTA. Last year was Caroline Garcia's year when she was on our radar. She's not on our radar this year. And it's only third round. She plays Marie Buzkova next, who, of course, was a quarterfinalist last year. Who knows how far she'll go, but it would be very Caroline Garcia if actually this is the Wimbledon where she tears it all up and wins the thing. And
if any of us got her
finally
in the
reaches world number one, as Andy Murray predicted. No, I didn't even look at her.
No, me either.
mentioned Buzkova, by the way. She beat Annette Kontaveit today, which ended Annette Kontaveit's career.
We knew the singles.
Oh my gosh, is she doing a Kirsten Flipkins?
We ran for months.
Not years.
She is playing the mixed doubles, I believe,
with
Emil Ruusuvuori.
Okay.
Unexpected pairing.
Okay.
Hope they win it.
Lots to process there.
Yeah.
The mixed doubles this year is going to be wild. There are some pairings in the old mixed doubles. But yeah, Annette Kontaveit's singles career came to an end today. She was presented with a little sort of trophy type thing, an ornament, and emotional scenes, as you'd expect. Really sad that she's having to put such a premature end to an incredible career. World number two, of course. And we wish her well. So it will be Buzkova against Garcia, Bencic against Linette in the next round. We also have Svitolina against Kenin. Kind of love that match.
Yeah, Kenin, very impressive to back up a big win. That's always something we look for when someone has a big moment, a big win, as Kenin did the other day. Took care of business in straight sets today, and Svitolina beat Elise Mertens in a 6-1, 1-6, 6-1 scoreline. I think it was one of those where, certainly for the first two sets, they just simply did not play well at the same time, as the scoreline suggests. I was in a bit of a David Law situation where I was on court 12, which is right next to court 2, so I could hear the match, but I could not see it. But it sounded it, and I was told afterwards that Svitolina really stepped up and played well in that. And that deciding set, despite an eye problem, she had a medical timeout for her eye during the second set. But yeah, there's a strange, quite fun statistical quirk that ended in that match, which was that Elise Mertens had never lost in round two of a slam, and she played 20 second rounds of slams. Like, only her and Billie Jean King and Chris Evert, I think, had won that many straight second rounds.
She's lost in round one, right?
She's lost in round one, she's lost in round three, but she was sort of unbeatable in round two. And personally, I always find it a shame when a fun statistical quirk comes to an end. I remember being gutted when Ostapenko ruined her spectacular Roland Garros record of round one, win the title, round one. She then did something really mundane, like losing round three.
Yeah.
Sort of ruin it forever. So
what's the point of that?
Exactly. Either win it or go out in round one.
Ostapenko lost today, by the way, to Saranika Steyer. The handshake was immense.
Oh.
And
okay.
They used to be friends. So,
did they?
Oh, yeah. Something has happened there.
For the benefit of YouTube, should we recreate the handshake and David can commentate on it for the benefit
please.
Of our listeners?
Who are you?
I'm Ostapenko.
Okay.
It was a limp wrist and the eye line was so far from Saranika Steyer's eye line. It wasn't
at the net. Ostapenko had already walked around the other side of the net to her bag.
There was never any risk of there being eye contact there at
drive
all.
By
like
handshake.
The risk, her hand was sort of limply there, like if you want to sort of touch it, you can. But it was absolutely epic. Elena Rybakina won today, two straight sets for her over Elise Cornet. Banana skin avoided. This was another one where there was an injury to Elise Cornet in the very latter stages of this in the second set. Actually incredibly similar to what happened to Karolina Muchová in that match earlier on today, in that the sort of back leg got overextended and it looked like a sort of hip issue that she got very heavily taped up just to match the existing heavy taping that Elise Cornet went out onto court with and seemingly always goes out onto court with. But Rybakina was very much in control, or certainly a set up, and it was on serve in the second, wasn't it, at the time when this happened, and would have been the heavy favourite to come through and win regardless. So that's Rybakina looking very much like a defending Wimbledon champion, serving incredibly well. And that's the dynamite for Elena Rybakina. And I'm starting to wonder why on earth I didn't have her in my predictions. I was so wrapped up in this virus that she's had and her lack of preparations. I don't know, I can imagine Elena Rybakina just making us, all of our preview content, look incredibly silly over the course of the next 2 weeks, because she's so good.
I kind of don't mind too much if she does, because that means she's fully fit and we can get to enjoy her watching her play.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been nice if you'd have given us a bit of warning, Elena, you know.
She plays Katie Bolter next, who's through to round three at Wimbledon for a second straight year. She opened a bakery today, David, against Victoria Tomova.
Oh, she had a bagel.
Six love set. Actually, probably wasn't the best thing for her, because she then lost the second set after winning the opener 6-love. It was another one of those where nobody was playing well at the same time. But on aggregate, I would say a really convincing win for Katie Bolter, and she will be big time underdog against Rybakina, but I expect her to make it fun and make it competitive.
Yeah, I think so. I just think it's hard to do that against Rybakina if Rybakina is playing well. Like, Rybakina feels like the perfect antidote to a home crowd. Like, if she just serves like she can and gets hold of a few returns.
It's just one big shush, that serve, isn't it?
Right. And she's not going to give the crowd anything to latch on to. Mm. She's not going to do anything that's going to annoy them. She's just going to play her game and, I think, be better than
Katie
Bolter.
Well, that's the thing. They're quite similar. She's just several levels better when she's playing well and fully fit.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's that.
Sorry,
party pooped on. Should we have a chat
but
about...
But she might not be fully fit.
Should we have a chat about what we've got coming
now
up tomorrow?
Because
the new order of play is in, and as expected, Andy Murray and Stefanos Tsitsipas slot in second on centre court. It's a not before 3 p.m. the resumption of that match, and it follows on from Carlos Alcaraz against Alexander Muller, which is first on centre court tomorrow from 1:30 p.m. So it'd be very unlikely to be before 3 p.m. anyway. Carlos Alcaraz would have to do something spectacular even for him, but I guess you have to put the not before time on there just for safety. Then it's Iga Świątek against Petra Martic. We have someone in our predictions who's picked Martic. If you'd like to laugh at them, subscribe to the newsletter.
Reggie is not back.
The spirit of Reggie is
lives
back,
on.
Though. And last on centre court tomorrow, the match in which Stan Wawrinka has absolutely no chance at all against Novak Djokovic. We'll see. We'll see. Court one tomorrow, Varvara Gracheva against Aryna Sabalenka. Then it's Cam Norrie against Christopher Eubanks. Ons Jabeur against, oh, I'm going to have to look up the name here. This one's a new one on me. Bai Zhuzhuan of China, 20 years old. Interesting. I will have a watch of her tomorrow. Don't know anything about her, if that much isn't clear. Two-time former champion Petra Kvitova against Alexandra Šašnjević. Tricky. Šašnjević is tricky. Can be awful, but can also be tricky. That's first up on court two tomorrow. Then the conclusion of Medvedev against Manarino, then Zverev, then Shapovalov, Brody, and Caroline Garcia, Marie Buzkova is tomorrow. Sinner Alice is on court three. That's interesting. Alice is, I can't say tricky again, can I? Tough.
Playing well.
Playing really well.
Yeah, he absolutely race through his match today, which is helpful because he's got another best of five tomorrow. But I mean, Jannik Sinner's draw has opened up so
massively.
Much
because who's gone?
Well, Fritz mainly, but yeah, I think
big threat Casper Ruud.
Yeah,
that's the thing. He's fourth seed, so it messes up the draw.
Back on Casper Ruud. Look how that worked out.
Sinner Elise is second on court three tomorrow. Then it's Pegula, and then Svitolina Kenin is last on there tomorrow. There are cracking matches all the way down. Court 12 has Kazatkina against Azarenka. Mm. It has Musetti Hurkacz, Rublev Goffin. These are all fantastic matches. First on court 18 tomorrow, just behind us here, Marta Kostyuk against Paola Badosa. And that order of play came out during Stefanos Tsitsipas's match against Andy Murray on centre tonight, when Paola Badosa was very much present. I believe she left at the end of set two, which would have been approximately
10 p.m.
So I've predicted Marta Kostyuk to win that match tomorrow. Matteo Berrettini against Alex de Minaur. And there's loads of interesting doubles on tomorrow.
Is it Berrettini de Minaur?
Yeah.
Wow.
Who knew?
I very nearly went for Berrettini. You know, for old time's sake.
Gosh. Hadn't realised that. That's a great match.
Yeah.
Although Berrettini, in his press conference, you know, he got a big win today against Sonego, who he'd lost, who got absolutely thrashed by the other day. He kind of seemed surprised that he was fit.
Me too.
Well, yeah, same. And he was like, I really didn't feel like I was necessarily going to be able to get through best of five sets here at Wimbledon because, yeah, he's just still recovering. So that doesn't fill me with hope.
He's been having whatever Stan Wawrinka's been having. So that's the order of play tomorrow. Just a quick one on Alcaraz, who's scheduled first on centre court tomorrow. That, of course, is a second round match due to the backlog. Marca, the Spanish newspaper, were reporting today that Alcaraz and team most displeased that Alcaraz wasn't scheduled today and that he will now have to play back-to-back matches.
Yeah. Don't have too much more to add on that, but that was a report in the Spanish press.
It's the first sort of little hint of Alcaraz being like, I'm one of the big guys now.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he came out and said it, though. Like, if he said that publicly in a press conference, I think that would be a bit more. Given that it's all sort of slightly veiled in his team sort of speaking on his behalf.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel quite so strong for me. But it'd be interesting if tomorrow in the press conference he makes a point of saying,
yeah,
I feel like I should have played. I still think he will.
No, I don't think he will either. It was interesting. I mean, round one singles was completed at 3:25 today. So it's quite a flex to be publicly or openly peeved at not being able to complete your round two singles on the day when other people are trying to complete their round one. Interesting one. We've never seen any hint of ego from Alcaraz, is what I'm saying. And, you know, he's got the achievements. Like, he can have a logo if he wants. He's done stuff.
Wonder what he'll have.
He probably already has one, doesn't he? People have logos. But yeah, look, he can have one because he's got the goods to back it up. That is it, I think. I have got one last thing on the agenda, and it says, Badosa sits a past sex dream. But
okay.
We have run out of time.
Oh, phew.
Mercifully. That was a thing that was talked about in their press conferences.
Okay.
It's a thing. For another day.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like David needs not to be blindsided by it. We'll do some prep
work. Let's just say I don't have any takes.
Let's just say maybe first contact was made in that relationship prior to Rome.
Okay.
Tune in tomorrow or the next day or some other day, maybe, and we might have time for that scintillating agenda point. But for now, let's tell you about Erin, our lovely Wimbledon mascot. Let's tell you about Maisie, David's mascot.
Yeah, sorry, Maisie, I completely failed with both Arthur Fies and Katerina Siniakova. Both were humiliated in straight sets.
I've got Xenia, and we scored points with David Goffin today. But for a second set wobble, never in doubt. And Matt's got Darwin. And Darwin, you're in Reggie territory.
We're in Reggie territory. I'm picking one of the favourites for the tournament tomorrow.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
we have Tricia Fitzgerald.
Oh, Tricia?
Who is in Colorado.
Oh, I've got a good friend from Colorado.
Like John Fitzgerald, the former Australian tennis player.
Yes.
Double specialist.
Won the career slam in doubles, I think.
And like Patricia Bostrom, one of the founding members of the WTA.
Very good.
I assume Tricia is Tricia always short for Patricia? Tricia, let us know. Other Trishas, let us know. Thank you very much for your support.
We've also got Brendan McHale from Dublin, Ireland.
Like Christina McHale.
Yes.
Oh, phew. I had nothing. Well done, Catherine.
And Brendan... There's a bloke called Brendan that works for the ATP.
There is. Yep.
Saw him today.
Yep.
Bit and like Brandon Nakashima, but that's a different name, so I don't know why I said that.
And Dublin, lovely place.
Yes.
Thank you, Brendan.
Cheers, Brendan.
And finally, we have Lars Graf.
Right, Lars.
Like Lars Graf.
Like the umpire of the 90s and 2000s.
Well, hang on, he's still around.
Yes, but he's no longer an umpire.
What is he now?
He's now a tournament director of Beijing, the China Open.
Yes, we did know that, didn't we?
Yes.
Thank you, Lars.
Thank you, Lars.
He is from Borstad, where Casper Ruud will be heading in a few weeks.
Oh, they can catch up there.
Not before he's lost in the doubles and been to see the weekend play at Wembley. This has been the Casper Ruud podcast live from Wimbledon. Thank you ever so much for listening. While I still have your attention, if you are with us on YouTube, please hit like and subscribe. Apparently that matters. And we'd be very grateful if you did that. And particularly David's kids would be very grateful.
I think
indeed.
I'm really cool.
Subscribe to the newsletter because it's excellent and it's free. Why wouldn't you? Leave us an Apple Podcasts review. Tell your friends. And if you would like to become an official friend of the Tennis Podcast and support us year round with doing what we do, going to all the slams, producing daily podcasts, producing weekly podcasts year round, and all the bonus content or hashtag Bocco, because I'm a young YouTuber now, then become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, and the link to do that is in our show notes. Thank you so much for listening, for watching, however you are with us, and we'll see you and speak to you tomorrow.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.